Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a party cast, an old school party cast, because Chris is here, Pernell is here, Brooke is here, and Tim is here. Yay!
Yay!
But
thank you.
By the way, not too old school. This is Chris Taylor, not Huber.
Yeah.
Who's that? I don't know who that person is.
Well, you see, back in the double digit days,
I was in the double digit days. No, but yeah,
I did some podcasts with Chris Huber, the aforementioned Chris.
I miss it. I wonder what he's been up to lately. I saw he just did like some kind of drum clinic in elementary school, which was pretty badass.
Yeah, I think he's just drumming, living the dream.
So drumming away, drumming into the hearts of the world. I'll have to bug him to come on sometime.
Yeah.
So what's everyone been up to? What did everyone do this weekend? Tim, I know what you did this weekend because we had a good time watching some wrestle.
Oh yeah, it was a great wrestling show. Thank goodness. the one before that was kind of not that great. So, yeah. But this one was great. AEW Revolution was great. I was going to be on the show last week, but I was seeing Bit Brigade instead here locally in Buffalo. So
nice. Love them.
I always appreciate being able to see video game bands like in my town because that seemed like an absurdity at one point.
And they've got a new guitarist, right?
I am not familiar enough with them.
Well, yeah, okay. I think they have a new guitarist now and he's cool.
I remember seeing their tour lineup was in Buffalo on a Tuesday night. I'm like, Tim, are you doing the show or are you going to Bit Brigade? He's like, Bit Brigade. I'm like, good. I would do the same fucking thing if I could.
Hell yeah.
Same.
Live vicariously.
Yeah, they hit Buffalo most of the time, I think, when they come through this area. I mean, usually it helps because, you know, Danimal Cannon's here.
Yeah.
Slash, you know, Arm Cannon. When they existed, they were here.
I thought they do exist still. I think they're working on an album right now.
Sure they are. So's Dan. I know they're working on stuff, and I know it takes a long time to get things together. It's not as easy when we were all in our 20s with no children or whatever.
Well, as somebody who's always working on something, I feel that.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool that, you know, Arm Cannon came up in Buffalo. I remember seeing them. Like Dan posted on the X-Trake Studios forums. He was like, hey, so we got this little band and we played these songs and we got a show coming up. You guys should come check us out. So we did.
and then began a long lasting friendship.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, as you know, of course, Dan was at the show last Tuesday and he introduced me to somebody as he is the one who introduced me to MAGFest because way back at like MAGFest 5 is around when that time was, like after seeing Arm Cannon, we were like, Brendan, because that was who you went to at the time, you have to get Arm Cannon to play at MAGFest. You have to. But he'd already kind of set the lineup, but then somebody dropped out, so they got to come in and play the very first show at Thursday night, MAGFest 5. And then everyone spent the rest of the weekend going, wow, that Arm Cannon show was insane. And it was insane.
When isn't an Arm Cannon show good though?
Yeah, but that was like a real coming out because like a lot of people hadn't heard them before. It felt like I remember like they finished their set and they're like and like people are screaming for them to do an encore. I very specifically remember Mustin like yelling at them like stay right there, one more fucking song. Like they were just like, well, okay. It was great. Wow. It was awesome. But yeah, Bit Brigade, also great.
I really wish I could remember those old MAGFest days. I hate the fact that I've been losing my memory more and more in recent years. And it's all those good memories that seem to evaporate from being.
My problem is just like they all mush together. Like, especially when, you know, like there's four, what, MAGFest 6, 7, 8, 9 were all at the Hilton Mark Center.
Yeah.
So it's like all those memories are kind of like
they're all the mushed same together. Event.
Yeah.
Not for me, because 9 was my first one.
Well, that's, yeah. There's things I remember distinctly about 9, because 9 was packed, and like I think that was the first year the Proto Men were there. That might have been the first time I saw Bit Brigade was 9, or it might have been 8. I don't remember.
It was the first time I saw them, for sure. And yeah. That's also where I met Joe.
Were they playing Ninja Gaiden?
They were, yes.
Okay, then that was the first time I saw them, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun meeting Chris at MAGFest. That was, I think, what, we've only met the one or two times?
I want to say 3 times at least. 3? Always at MAGFest.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I remember I met our mutual friend Tina because you were pushing her around in a wheelchair.
One of the shows that year.
That was our second time. We hung out a couple times that year, and then the third time was 2017, which was the last year I was there.
I don't think I remember that one.
I think you were walking around in a. Wait, it's one of the ones where you were walking around in a bathrobe.
I was in a bathrobe. That was like an early MAGFest.
Really? It would have been.
Wasn't like that Zangief cosplay, like where you were in a bathrobe?
I think that was at MAGFest 10.
It was either
It was either 2016 or 2017, and I haven't been there since 2017, so.
Maybe it was during one of the parties that were going on. Like, it was like.
Maybe.
What was the themed party for the lounge that year?
Yeah.
What was it, the pajama party?
Yeah, that was like 2014, I want to say, but I've come across you more recently than that in person. Just in like the hotel lobby.
There's so many people I bump into at MAGFest that remember me and have vivid memories of me and doing things with me, and I don't know their name at all.
It's because you're very tall. You're tall, so everybody just kind of looks like short people running around doing short people things.
I'm tall and wide. I'm very noticeable.
Yeah. Because, like, I'm kind of tall, but you're taller than me by a good amount.
I don't know. We'll find out at VGMCon.
Yeah.
The next time I'm going to meet y'all.
Heck
Tim,
yeah.
Any word on you being able to make that yet?
I'm not going. No. No way. No. No.
I was hoping there'd be a way.
I have work getting done on my house.
Y'all getting done? Anything fun?
How fun do you think bathrooms are?
Medium fun.
Okay. How fun do you think plumbing not leaking is?
Ooh.
I mean, plumbing not leaking is nearly my favorite thing.
I love it when the plumbing is not leaking. And when the plumbing is leaking, it's the dirt fucking worst.
I was going to say, that's among my least favorite things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad. So
plumbing can make or break your day for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why they're all filthy rich.
Yeah, I think our, our house, this house was, I think, built in the 1940s, which is almost 100 years ago now. It's like an 80-year-old house. But yeah, I think the plumbing is also that old, pretty close to it. So like, yeah, in the past like year and a half, the pipe under our kitchen sink just got a hole in it. And then the bathroom sink, I went to like remove the trap to get something out of it, and it just disintegrated. So it's just like, okay, well, and you know, both of the times when that happens, it's just like, well, great. Well, great. So
yay.
Needs to get addressed before something more severe happens. But yeah, that I think, yeah. I mean, it, you know, nothing's urgently wrong. I could just keep putting it off. Why not? Right.
Right.
That's what we've been doing to our kitchen sink. We just have like a paint can holding up a pipe. It works good enough most of the time.
Oh, boy.
Every few months it'll pop off and you got to be like, son of a bitch, guess we're wiping that up again. Should we call someone to fix it? Maybe next paycheck.
Well, maybe you shouldn't be going to VGMCon either.
Nah, I guess
the sounds of it.
I mean, that's a perfect time to escape from a house.
Maybe.
Well, we paid for most of VGMCon with tax money.
Oh, yeah, I need to get some of that.
And we bought a fridge with tax money, too. That was fun. Losing a fridge is always a good time.
Yeah.
I like our fridge so much. We bought one when we moved here because they lied about there being a fridge here.
Our new one has like an LED light on the inside and it blinds us when we open that fridge. We need to find a way to change it.
The ham is in 5D.
Close enough.
These soda cans are going nuclear.
Oh, man. But anyone have anything else they want to chat about before we dive into some reviews? I know we got a bunch of games to talk about tonight. I'm not sure if anyone else had any fun week plans that they wanted to discuss.
I hit my nuclear soda can quota of conversation topics. Everything else has just been Final Fantasy VII, and nobody wants to hear about that.
I haven't gotten to play enough of it yet. I've just been busy.
It came out, what, last Thursday, right?
Yep.
I am now 32 hours into it.
Oh, yeah, wow. I'm like four.
Yeah. I'm sometimes I get the focus and I get to really, really, like, you know, do what I'm trying to do, you know, like really focus in on something. Yeah. And then most of the time I don't. But this time, doing pretty good.
Nice. Yeah, I'll get, at this point, it's just like, here I am on this podcast and not playing Final Fantasy VII, but.
Me neither.
Before that, I had like a couple hours, but I was like, God, I had like 3 hours, didn't I? But instead I was like, kind of just taking care of some stuff. Well, so like a coworker bought a used Xbox One X from a place where you stop for games. for her kids for Christmas, but she bought like a used one, you know, single mom at this point, and like after a month and a half the thing just died, and she was just like asking if I could take a look at it. So I've been like mucking about with it for the better part of my evening.
Dang.
I'm pretty sure the hard drive is shot on it, unfortunately. And yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of
a bummer.
Yeah,
was it Brooke?
I had an amazing weekend.
Yeah.
A lovely board game. More to come. Lots of shout outs to Bryn Mel coming up in a review later.
Oh, sweet.
Maybe Tim can listen long after the show is done recording.
Joe, yeah. Grab that segue.
Oh, that's a later review. Unless we want to shift that to later. First.
I think she was. It was just an opening to go into reviews.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not even that. I did kind of want to mention I had an awesome weekend because I normally don't do shit at all ever for my weekend. And I really normally never socialize. But it's actually kind of interesting. But yeah, no pressure to listen to him. But I hope you do later. I know you get to bed.
Man, now there's pressure.
See what I did there? Yep, my hands are clean of any blood, so that's nice.
What about you, Purnell? Anything fun happen over your weekend?
I would have said yes up until 10 minutes ago, so I'm going to go with no.
Ease.
What?
Oh, there is Ease news. It's we got a release date for Ease 10 Nordic.
Oh, when is that?
I want to say it was November 24th. If I'm correct on that, that will be an amazing display of short-term memory. Released.
What happened 10 minutes ago? I was busy recording SML podcast.
Oh, it happened during SML podcast, so it bounces out. But
oh shit!
I'll withhold the story because I don't need to be a random joke for later episodes.
Understood.
But other than that, yeah, this life's life. Things are trucking. Reviews to game. Let's party.
All right, word.
Well, I can't find the exact date, so maybe I made it up, but it is fall of this year.
I'll take you on good faith that you made it up for a positive reason. Let's just assume it's coming out in November.
Attention is a positive reason.
Anyway, should we get to reviews?
I think we
better.
All right, let's go.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Balatro, developed by Local Thunk, published by Playstack, released February 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. The poker-like roguelike, Balatro's his hypnotically satisfying deck builder, where you play illegal poker hands, discover game-changing jokers, and trigger adrenaline-pumping, outrageous combos. Tim, what is going on in Balatro?
Balatro? Balatro?
Balatro?
Balatro?
I don't know.
Balaros.
I don't know.
Balatro. Balatro. I think it's Balatro, I believe. That's how I've heard it pronounced. That's how I'm pronouncing it. Balatro.
Balatro.
Balatro. All right, cool. So, gosh, I feel like at this point, this game needs like no introduction. You know, it came out a couple weeks ago. I would have been on reviewing it in a more timely fashion, but I was a selfish boy, as I mentioned, going to see video game Rock and Metal last week. So you might have heard of Balatro at this point. I'll say a lot of times when I'm, when I'm reviewing games, like I usually try to avoid RPGs when I, in my history reviewing for the show, try to avoid RPGs. I'm looking, how long do I think a game is? How long, looking for games that I can either complete relatively quickly, in like under 5 hours or so, or at least I can get the gist of in 5 or 6 hours. Right. Because, I only got so much time to put into games, and I don't want to overcommit with like some big RPG that I put like dozens of hours into, except in like, special circumstances, like when I reviewed Sekiro and I put like 30 hours into that before I reviewed it and I wasn't even done with it yet. I've played like 25 hours of Balatro in the past couple weeks. I've been playing the shit out of this game. So it sucks, of course. That's where I'm going. I just kept digging deeper to see where the quality was. No, okay, so this game is a roguelike card game, poker-based card game. You fire the game up, you get in there, and the progression, you get like stages come in sets of three, and you have to get through 8 sets of three or 24 rounds in order to complete a run. Each game or each they're referred to as blinds, you have to beat basically a certain score. So when you start out, you get a standard deck of standard deck of cards, which I think everybody's familiar with: your clubs, your diamonds, your spades, your hearts, your ace through king, numbering 52 deck of cards. That's cool. And you are putting down, you'll draw, I think, 8 cards, something like that, 7 or 8 cards. And you are looking to play down poker hands for a score. So, high card, pairs, 2-pair, 3-of-a-kind, full house, straights, flushes, etc. All that stuff. I think people are mostly familiar with poker in some capacity, even if they don't know like the exact hierarchy of the various hands. So you start out just playing cards, trying to hit a score. Cool. Just like real poker, right? And you got that hand of 8 cards. You have basically, you can put down 3 different hands, 3 scoring hands to try to, clear the score and move on to the next blind, as it were. And you get a certain amount of discards. So you might have a starting hand that has Jack Squat in it, and you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to discard anywhere from 1 to 5 cards and get some other cards in there, see what I can put together, and clear the blind and move on. Now, after you clear a blind, you get a certain amount of money just for clearing it, and like you get some bonus bucks for however many hands you have left, and you get to spend that money on cheating. The most prominent form that this takes in this game is there's jokers that will be for sale for the shop, and jokers can do a wide range of things to increase your score and start to tilt the odds in your favor. So you can get jokers that, it can be as straightforward as like, oh, anytime you play like 2-pair, you get this bonus. Or anytime you play like an odd numbered card, you will get a bonus, or an even numbered card. Or when you play spades, or when you play face cards, or when you play a particular combination. There's one that's like there's just all kinds of odd things in there. There's like one that's like a radio, and you get like bonuses whenever you play a 10 or a 4. Get it? 10-4. It's funny. Or you get a bonus for, like when you have 0 discards left, you get a bonus. Or if you don't use any discards, then you'll get more money at the end of the round. Or there's some that just give you money, or there's some that will like give you money. There's just like all kinds of things, and you can hold 5 of them at a time. And then there's also tarot cards. And what the tarot cards do is they generally will change, they change a card in your deck. So there will some, like, it, you'll say you have your hand of cards in front of you, like during the game, while you're looking for stuff to score, and you can play one of those that will say, turn up to three cards into spades. So you can start shifting your deck away from having four suits to having three suits or two suits or one suit. So that way flushes become super easy. Or you can put multipliers on certain cards. There's like a lot of different things that they have in there. Like you can turn them gold, so that if you're holding in your hand at the end of the round, you get extra money. Or, you know, like I said, it'll add to the score multiplier. It'll add to the multiplier in other ways. It could be wild cards, so it could be any suit. It could be a there's one that's like a card. It's, you can turn the card glass, so it will multiply the multiplier, but it might break when you play it. So you got to be careful with it. So it's like a higher risk, higher reward card. You know, it can change the value of cards. It could be like, okay, here's this card. You can pick two cards and it's going to upgrade them one level. So suddenly, like, you don't have any tens in your deck, but you have like four jacks or eight jacks. Excuse me. They start with four. That's not weird. Eight. So you have more jacks. So you have more opportunity to get three of a kind, four of a kind, five of a kind, an illegal poker hand, yet it still counts in this game as something. Then they have these like planetary cards. And what those do is they upgrade the base score for playing a poker hand. So at a base level, say like playing two pair will give you, has like a base score of like 20 times two, I think is what it might be. But if you level that up, then it becomes 30 times three or 40 times four. And that's just for playing two pair. So you can sit there and upgrade two pair over and over and over again. And all of a sudden, like, you just need to play two pair to hit like a really good score. Then there's these other cards that are rarer, called spectral cards. And they usually have a bit more of a trade-off to them. Like they will turn, when you go to play them, and these only turn up like in the shop, they don't just randomly pop up in the game. They'll like pull up a hand of cards and say like, it will destroy one random card, but it'll give you like two aces with like special modifiers on them. Or it will change all of the cards to one random suit. So you can't control it, but it could be really good. Or one random number, or just other stuff like that. And so with all these pieces coming together, and as you start moving forward through the different blinds, you start creating builds. So you can start angling your deck towards like, well, okay, I'm going to start turning all of my, you know, I'm going to try to get a lot of diamonds in this deck, and I'm going to try to find jokers that give me bonuses to flushes, or, jokers that give me bonuses to playing hearts or diamonds. So that way, like, you know, I'll have a better chance of hitting these cards, and I'll get a bigger score for doing so. And I'm also going to use this planetary card to upgrade flush over and over and over again. So you start like looking for jokers that will play into that strategy, and like looking for those planetary cards and looking for tarot cards that will transform things. And it's just like, it's really good and it's really addictive. And there's like a huge variety to the way, like, there's just so many jokers in the game. Like, I'm still unlocking them after 20 hours in, and like trying to find new strategies that will work. Like, I've cleared the game, I don't know, a number of times at this point. Basically, like, they start you out with a deck, because there's different decks to play as too when you start. Like, the first deck you get gives you like another hand you can play for every blind. And then the next deck gives you an extra discard. And then there's another one where it's like you have one less hand you can play, but you have an extra joker slot. So there's like a trade-off there. And as you like it, the game lays its goals in front of you. It's like, okay, if you want to unlock this thing with a question mark on it, you need to complete the game with this deck. So there's a good carrot on the stick there. And like, I feel like, especially early on, every time, you don't even have to like clear a round. Like, you're just playing, you're just unlocking more jokers. You're trying more things. You're playing more cards, and it's just unlocking more stuff for you. But it's just so like well designed, and addictive. Like, it's really hard to put down. It's just so relaxing sitting there. Like, I'm playing it on my Steam Deck to just be like, you know, laying down, just got the Steam Deck there, just like playing some cards. And I've, you know, it just feels really good when you find, like, you figure out like a good build. Like, one Joker that I actually haven't seen in many runs, it's a pair of pants. And every time you play two pair, the multiplier gets a little bit bigger. So it incentivizes you to sit there and just play two pair, two pair, two pair, two pair, two pair, to just make these pants more and more powerful. And then look for jokers that give you bonuses to two pair. And one of the other things that I didn't mention yet is, like, for the sets of three blinds, there's a small blind, a big blind, and a boss blind. The small blind and the big blind you can skip, and it shows you there's like a little bonus tag you get for skipping a blind. So you don't even have to play it, and it gives you a bonus. So that means you don't go into the shop after, you know, clearing a hand, but you might get a pack of cards. It's like, okay, you can play two tarot cards out of this pack of cards, or it'll like double your money, or it'll make the next Joker in the shop like holographic or rare, or, you know, guarantee that it's foil or something like that, which will have additional bonuses. But having a, you know, like this pair of pants, it incentivizes you to like not take those shortcuts and bonuses, but I need to play. I had to sit there and like, no, I got to play every single blind so I can sit there and play two pair, two pair, two pair, two pair, and build this up and build this up. And that I think was the first build that I like won with. It was a build completely based around playing two pair over and over and over again and building it up. And like, it had like some side synergies with playing a full house or three of a kind as well. But the main thing was just like two pair and like looking for jokers that will enhance that. And I've put some really broken bullshit together. I think my highest score hand that I ever put down was like 200 million something. Which it starts you out at like 300. And I think to finish like the last blind of like the eighth round is like in the hundreds of thousands. So like, it was insane. Like, the numbers can get so out of control. Like, if you, not only if things go your way, but if you make like good decisions along the way and you get those breaks, and especially when you find like jokers and circumstances that will like multiply the multiplier, because many things like will add to it. But of course, you know, as we know math, when you're multiplying things and not just adding them, numbers get bigger. So I've had some really tilted builds where it's like, oh, every time I, the most disgusting thing I had is I opened the deck was like, it gave me, I got a rare Joker early on, and the Joker just said, it was the first Joker I got. And it said, this Joker copies the abilities of the Joker to the right of it. I didn't even have any other Jokers, but I'm like, this is good. I'm bringing it with me. I'm buying it now. And shortly thereafter that, I got one Joker that gave me a 1.5 multiplier every time I played a certain suit, which would change every round, but let's say it was hearts. And then I got another Joker, and these were in the same pack that said all hearts are diamonds and vice versa, all spades are clubs and vice versa. So I was just like, they were suddenly all, it was just red and black, just red and black. And I was blowing the scores out of the water. Like, it was insane.
Wow.
Yeah. On top of all of that, once you clear the game five times, they have challenges where they set certain parameters for you know, the game, where they might start you with a deck that has like no face cards in it, or you know, it eliminates certain like you know, you have fewer Joker slots, or you get less money, or I think there's one where they give you literally no money, but they give you a bunch of Jokers that the sell value of them goes up after every round, and like basically that's your income. And you have to figure out other ways to get it. That's like one of the challenge things, but it's cool. Like, there's just so much, you know, value there in the game for things to do and things to try. Like, there's, and then if that wasn't enough, after you beat the game with a deck, you can then start increasing the difficulty for that deck specifically.
Oh, geez.
You can start like raising. I think they call that the chip value. Everything has fucking poker terminology to it, and it, you know, it all runs together. But it's like, okay, well, now I need to beat a game, you know, clear a game with a deck using like the red chip modifier, and now I need to do it with the red and blue chip modifier. So, like any good roguelike where you start increasing the stakes after you finish the game, that has that. So you can keep chasing higher numbers and challenging yourself. And the entire appearance of the game has like this hazy, like video poker, but it looks good sort of feel to it. But it's like has kind of like this, it just like looks like a very clean CRT. And like the music is kind of like hazy, as it were. And that all adds to kind of that relaxing feeling, like when I'm just sitting there and I'm like locked into my Steam Deck and I'm like, this is just like just sitting there and just like the music's just kind of like, and I'm staring at the screen trying to figure out my odds of like drawing some more diamonds or some shit on my last discard to see if I can clear the last boss blind. Oh, boss blinds, by the way, have like special rules to them. And I swear they like laser target your deck sometimes, but those can be like, this is where they can get you, like where you do a thing where like, okay, I'm going to overload my deck with spades so I can get good flushes. And then you run into a boss blind that's like all spade cards are disabled, which means they don't score, which means you're screwed. There are ways to reroll the boss blind, and it's, yeah, like there's certain jokers that will reroll the boss blind, or there's other circumstances that will reroll it. So there's ways to get around it if you plan ahead, and sometimes you have to get a little bit lucky, but, you know, sometimes it's just like, well, you got me. Or it's like, you can't play the same hand type twice. So it's like, oh shit, I was relying entirely on flushes. Now I can play one flush, so I need to make it good. Or you have zero discards, or you can only play one hand. That's gotten me a few times because I've been like playing, like, because I played some decks that it's like, okay, sure, yeah, one hand. That's what my build is built around. I need to hit one really good hand and I can make it through.
This is a really solid game. You are beyond addicted to it at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
It clocks in at $15. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, like, it's absolutely 200,000% a buy it. My only caveat is like, man, you should really buy this on a portable system, because like I just can't. It just feels like playing it on a TV is not the way to go, because if you're playing it on Steam Deck or on a Switch, not only do you have it portable, but you also have a touchscreen for just moving the cards around, which is like optimal. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, playing it on a TV is kind of the worst way to play this game. Still great, but I think for an optimum experience, you want to shoot for something you can play portably. But I mean, there's practically nobody I wouldn't recommend this game to, unless you have like an immense disdain for card games and poker and roguelikes. If like you hate the exact things that this game is, even then, like, you just might dig it. But, cool. Yeah, 100% a buy it.
All right, sounds good. Tim, that is it for you. Thank you, as always, for coming on and chatting with us.
Happy to join. I'll be sure to catch up on the later part of the show later, but I'm going to go start winding down, probably by playing some Balatro.
Nice. Kind of figured that was coming.
Yeah.
You have any final words before we let you go?
No, I don't. All right.
Night, night, Tim.
Good night. Good night.
Have a good one. Next up, Garden Life, a cozy simulator developed by Still Alive Studios, published by Nacon. Released February 22nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5 for $39.99. Coming to Switch March 14th. Using appropriate gardening techniques and your creativity, bring an abandoned plot back to life and experience the joy and peace that cultivating your own garden brings. Brooke, tell us about your time with Garden Life, a cozy simulator.
Oh, man. I saw Garden Life coming up, upcoming games, and I was like, cozy, no questions asked. I'm gonna give it a shot. And I don't know what I was expecting from this one, but I want to start by saying I was not expecting as much as this game gives us. Like, it is a lot. When I was checking this game out, I wasn't just interested because it says cozy. That's a big part of it. But I also wanted it because it's it clearly from the screenshots, had some really beautiful next level art, specifically the plants and the characters in town you interact with in this game are just way too gorgeous. And typically, those two things alone are enough for me to love a game. That's all I care about. When I play Stardew Valley, I pretty much water my flowers, my plants, go talk to everybody in town, then I go home and go to bed. Is there combat in that game? There's caves? Damn, that's crazy. So yeah, Garden Life seemed right up my alley for a nice, chill play. I started the game and I was greeted by some truly beautifully, incredibly well-designed characters in a beautiful town. My garden is located outside of town. They're telling me why I'm here, and it differs a little bit from your average, here's a new plot of land to farm, game where your grandfather died, or whatever. I have technically moved to town because someone did pass away, but it wasn't my relative. It was a person in town named Robin, who all the townspeople tell me was really kind and wonderful and was taken from us too soon. I'm already really sad about that. Then they show me a picture of the late Robin, and my heart breaks, and I'm like, oh my god, Robin is so fine. They are so attractive. My god, why have they passed? Why can I not hang out with them and talk to them? I would like to be married to them in the game, actually. They got it all. Good at gardening, pillar of the community, creative, kind. Walking around looking like that? The townspeople were right, if you only know one thing about Robin. So we wish that they were still with us. Now, if you don't want spoilers for the first couple in-game weeks in the game, tune out now. What I'm about to share with you happens pretty quickly after the beginning of the game, within an hour or two. Once we get a rundown on the situation that brought us here, it's time to check out the digs, our new garden. And it is stunning. It's heartbreakingly beautiful. Hey, can you guys hear me? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay, my bad. I thought I cut out for a second. it's stationed along a peaceful country road. We just lost Chris. Yeah, I panicked there. You know, I was having some mic and PC issues as I moved in, so thanks for confirming. But yeah, no, so once
Chris
we get a rundown.
Chris is the one having issues. Ha ha.
Friggin' Chris, dude. Oh my god, that guy.
Get your shit together, Chris.
Come on, Chris. This is my life. My garden
Chris
life,
Chris is internet
dude.
Provider.
Please. It's like he voted. So I guess he's all right. Anyway, so once we get a rundown on the situation that brought us here, time to check out the digs, our new garden. It is exquisite. Freaking love the art in this game, if you can't tell. It's stationed along a peaceful country road next to the bus stop we rode in on, and between the road and a nice bubbling creek, even with animated fish in it. There's a broken bridge going across the creek where we can eventually expand our territory across the way. For now, as many cozy growing plant resource and time management games go, it's time to clean up this farm. So we pick up some rocks, we weed some weeds, but they don't disappear. We can use weeds to make compost, fertilize our plants, and make them grow faster. We can turn the rocks into decorations, either by reutilizing them as furniture pieces themselves or as material to craft new furniture pieces and decorations we can place anywhere. Because it turns out a big part of this game is crafting, furnishing, decorating, placing furniture and plants and decorations around your property. And this game is 3D, first person, and we have a lot of freedom where to place things. At first, it's almost overwhelming, even though the property intentionally isn't overwhelmingly too large to explore at first. They really pace you out here. There's so much freedom in this game that I thought I was taking advantage of all the options the game offered me for like an in-game week, and I wasn't. I planted some rose bushes, a bunch of other different flowers, so many different types of flowers, vines, seeds, bushes, plants. This game is nuts. There's different variations of flowers and colors you can cultivate slowly over time by hybriding seeds. I haven't seen most of them. Anyway, I was told to mostly get rid of all the weeds, but the leaving a few isn't bad for pest prevention, which is interesting. There's so much to do to keep the plants in the garden all alive and happy, but it's not hard, and it's not too monotonous for me at all. We gotta water them, of course, but we also have to keep pests off if they pop up. We also have to regularly prune the flowers, which doubles as getting us flower cuttings from the plants. If we cut off a blossom, maybe slice off a nice long stem rose from our rose bushes, we can use that flower later in a bouquet. But just one of the things we could do with it. We could craft at our crafting station. Then we go to town to sell that to make more money, buying more seeds, more special tools to use in our garden, of which there are tons of colors and fun holiday varieties with different skills. We can buy furniture, materials to craft our own furniture. This game can go in some really different directions here, depending on what we want to focus on the most. But like many of these games, we're guided by some quests of things people in town want from us just to start us out. We start knocking out these quests. One of the first quests is to build a wooden bench with squirrel carvings all over it so this one lady from town can come sit down in our garden sometimes. Yo, this squirrel bench blew my mind. I was like, First of all, crafting's really fun. I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, it just started sinking in. Like, they didn't just make me make a folding chair. Like, even the first piece of furniture I make is just intense looking and funny, but pretty and cute. So it started sinking in for me how deep this game is. I mean, I built this thing. It's intricate. I have a total freedom over where I want to place it, anywhere in the garden. I can rotate it once I place it, not just in like four directions, like any direction. This is the real deal. There's not a visible grid here, to say the least, when we're decorating. And I'm just like, whoa, this looks so good. And I'm leaning down and I'm admiring it. And then I hear someone else say right behind me, wow, that does look pretty good. And I look up and guess who's talking to me? Yo, it's Robin, the extremely sexy they, them I've been crushing on that we met at the beginning of the game. Aren't they supposed to be dead? And Robin goes, boo. And then they start laughing and then says, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. I'm friendly, I promise. I didn't want to overwhelm you when you got here first day because I thought like a ghost might be a little much for you, but I think you're ready now. By the way, no hints from the shop or the beginning of the game that anything supernatural might happen in this game. And this is kind of where it kicks off. So he's like, they're like, oh, great job on my garden so far. By the way, you're doing way better than I expected. And oh my God, if Robin could see me in my living room playing this game, they'd be like, yeah, I'm gonna go back to heaven now because this girl is creepy. She is too thirsty for my ghost ass right now. Because I was like jumping up and down. I went and got Carrie. I was like, Carrie, it's Robin. Remember Robin? And Carrie's like, yes, I do. Oh, great. Robin's a ghost. Cool. And I'm like, if you don't believe I had this reaction for real, you can visit my social media where a few days to my friends. I was posting about how excited I was. Ghost Robin in this game when they showed up. My partner is like, okay, we get it. Robin's back. Can we just move on? So you can tell I've enjoyed this game. Before we go into official rating here, I want to mention this game is so, so real. Just even outside of my own eccentricities that clearly take off in this game. It is very deep. It isn't just deep story-wise or time sink-wise, but also in the gardening itself. I don't have time tonight to talk about all the crazy things you could do in this game. I have not played that many 3D simulator games before, and I know Joe has more experience in those than me, so I wasn't sure what to expect, but even after I played it for a while, I was not expecting this level of magical garden realness. Let's just talk about pruning flowers. By the way, all the sound design and ASMR noises we get are top-notch in this game. Very relaxing and stimulating. Anyway, I'm used to games where you walk up to the plant. If you're gardening, you press A if you want to water it or whatever. So I thought watering the flowers in the game, pruning the blossoms, this is going to be the same thing. But I noticed that sometimes I wasn't pruning blossoms, sometimes I was. Once I had to start selling flower bouquets, this is frustrating because I thought either the game was bugging out or I'm not guaranteed a blossom every prune, which would make sense. Like maybe every time you prune with your shears, there's a dice roll chance that happens behind the scenes to see if you get a big juicy rose. Well, I was wrong. That was me not expecting this game to be a physically real space with very real looking plants. I was gesturing wildly with my hands, and if you heard a noise, that was me knocking something over just now. To prune a blossom from a full bush full of blossoms, you have to actually position your snippers around the flower or stalk, specifically on the plant you want to snip, the blossom itself that you want to collect, or you're going to end up with just whatever random thing your pruning shears are pointing at. In my case, that ended up being a bunch of twigs and leaves and crap. Sometimes flowers, rarely, and I'm like, wow, there's so many roses on this bush. Can a player get one single rose? In the case of rose bushes, which have so many stalks, I went from not getting a blossom every time to getting like 30 or 40 blossoms a day once I figured out what I was doing. It's not hard to prune the actual flowers. You just have to pay attention. And all the plants look different, which I wasn't expecting to. Your rose bushes, tulip plants, sunflowers, those are not identical because they grow like real plants organically. So you gotta look where you're cutting. You gotta cut what you want to cut. Treat the game like it's real because it is, Brooke. So what happened with all the random clippings that I had? Were those just lost actions? Did I get nothing? The answer is no. I got a bunch of compostable material that I put all in my composter. I didn't even realize I was collecting the whole time. This is just one very small example of my experience starting out of this game, realizing it opens up to give me more gardening and crafting options than I could have expected. And this game is not just about gardening. Final note, it's got a lot of other stuff going on in this universe. There may or may not be an evil corporation, politics, there may be characters you don't even meet until way later in the game. There are mechanics you're going to learn way later in the game because you're not just building a silly little garden with squirrel benches, you're also building an enterprise. And if you think building an enterprise doesn't sound very cozy, my friend, you need to play this game, open up your closed mind, because you don't even know.
Sounds like you enjoyed your time with it.
I really liked it, man. Thanks for letting me wild out on this one. This was fun. I only started playing it last week. I crammed a ton of it. But yeah, I would recommend this to anyone who sees that title and is like, oh, Garden Life Cozy Simulator, huh? I wonder if that's good. That sounds like something I would like. I would say it is, and this game's worth your time, even at this higher price point.
Was it sufficiently cozy for you?
Definitely. I'm cozed.
Very good. Your official verdict at $40 then?
Definitely. And I know this price fluctuates a little bit developing on platforms. I would pay up to $60 for a game like this.
I think they have a special edition with bonus content.
Yo, but, I'm gonna check that out.
You could drop some extra bucks on if you want.
But, I'm gonna check that out right now.
Next game is Berserk Boy, developed and published by Berserk Boy Games, released March 6th on Switch and Steam for $20. Berserk Boy is a high-speed, action-packed platformer with Metroidvania elements, packed with vibrant and stylish pixel art. Go berserk as you change different forms and use the power of lightning, fire, ice, air, and earth to save the planet. Purnell, are you Captain Planet in this game, it sounds like? Or what is going on in Berserk Boy?
Well, I wouldn't quite go about calling you Captain Planet, but you do get the power of all the elements but heart, unless you count the depowered form as that, which is possible. Who knows? In a perfect world. But you do play as a young man named Key, who is a member of a group referred to as the Resistance. And in that regard, the Resistance is fighting, you know, an evil force. I just call them the Dark Minions or whatever. And in this instance, on one of the particular missions, Key comes across an interesting bird named Fiore, who is running away with something referred to as a berserk orb. The typical, you know, anime-type trope vibes, he comes across this item, he takes it on, he takes on the power of it, he becomes Berserk Boy, master of the berserk elements. The game doesn't call them that, but I certainly will. And at this point, you are pretty much officially tasked with stopping an evil doctor, recovering the other berserk orbs, and saving the day. And that takes us on our
fall
adventure.
Fall into the abyss.
I was originally expecting this to be kind of like Mega Man X, and though it is not 100% like that, I will say what it gets right is the part I was most hoping it would get, which is the momentum-based gameplay, as in there's lots of dashing, sliding, and jumping that's taking place in this title.
Speaking of sliding, a whole bunch of people just slid into our channel. Dopey, thank you so much for the raid. 31 people coming in here. We are chatting about the game Berserk Boy that that is releasing tomorrow on Switch and Steam. It clocks in at $20. Purnell is telling us about it. For all the new people, Purnell, what exactly was Berserk Boy again?
So basically, it is an action platformer that stars a young man who takes on the power of the berserk elements to become Berserk Boy and save the day. Gameplay consists of a series of levels broken up into three stages each. Unlike a game that you might be thinking about in comparing to this, you don't choose levels in any order you want. You go in a sequential order. And early on, you can't do much of anything. You can run and you can jump, kind of wall jump. And after you get Fiore in your midst, you can kind of throw him to sort of attack enemies. But eventually, once you get your first Berserk Orb, you gain access to a variety of cool powers. The one that I'm going to talk about, because it's obviously the first one, and the one you're colored as on the box art, is the Lightning Orb, which turns you into the Purple Orb, you know, Lightning Berserk Boy. In this instance, this for me is probably the most fun I've had with all the forms in the game, which is funny because also the first form you get, you gain the ability to release electrical charges. Think sort of like Azure Striker Gunvolt, in the sense that you can pretty much dash into enemies. And after doing so, you can press the B button to send out an electrical charge, which does sit like a pulse and hurts everybody that has been connected with you through way of dashing. Now, thankfully, the dashes hurt the enemies, too. You can outright kill enemies by just smashing them indefinitely. But where's the fun in that, right? So you can do cool things like that. You can do like a power stomp. You can release electrical charges. And you can also buy more upgrades for this form at the store. Also, you can buy upgrades for every form you get in this game, of which there are a total of about five or so. And it's cool because each one has its own unique perk. Like, one might allow you to, say, fly through certain areas of the stages. You might find unless you drill through the earth, etc., etc. And they all have their own forms of attacking too, but again, for whatever freaking reason, I just like me some purple. I just like the dashing collision that it gives you. One thing that they did about this game too, as far as I'm concerned, I thought was pretty smart, is certain power-ups or certain forms have powers that are needed to traverse the stages. Now, in some games of this nature, you typically would have to, you know, go on like either your pause menu or your Rolodex menu to select the form that does the thing you want. And while in some cases, such as using the dashing form, the lightning dash of lightning form, you would have to switch for that. Others, like the flame drill, if you just run up on the wall that uses the power, you'll go into the drill form specifically because it knows you need to do that to traverse the actual level. Elements like that, I think, are pretty cool. They let you maintain your momentum, and then when you come out of the structure, you go back to the orb form you were originally using before you collide it with the wall to drill into it. And there's other areas like that, too, where they do similar, where they change you in the place at the point where you need to. And I appreciate that. During levels, you're exploring and beating the snot out of robots and other enemies, but you'll also be looking for resistance members that are hidden throughout the stages, which are used to unlock various gates that are, you know, strewn throughout certain levels. Like, let's say, for example, each level there's a 100% resistance rating you want to get. Think Mega Man X6, how that game had robots hidden in different areas of the stages you could rescue. Though, unlike Mega Man X6, it's fun to find people in this game. You also don't have to worry about them getting hijacked by evil viruses. They're just chilling, waiting for you to rescue them. And if you do, your resistance gauge goes up, which lets you unlock certain doors, which lets you access more secrets on the level, including certain emblems you need to collect. What they do when you collect all the emblems on a stage, well, I won't tell you, but it's something pretty nifty. It is actually worth collecting the collectibles in this game, and I can state that, honestly, because they all have a genuinely cool purpose as far as like progressing your enjoyment of the game. When you get to the end of a level, you generally end up fighting a primary boss, and by beating that boss, you will gain access to a new orb, which gives you a new form to further explore into the game. And of course, you can take that form back to older stages to unlock more of the secrets on the levels that you've already surpassed. Ultimately, I feel like this game is an outright gem. I didn't even get to the point where I should do that now, actually. The music is the last thing I should mention. The music in this game is a freaking treat. When I originally heard that T. Lopes was doing it, I'm not sure if it's Lopes or Lopez, but it feels like it should be Lopes. Could that be fun as a name?
Lopes, yeah, is correct.
Oh, cool. There we go. T. Lopes. He does good music, but I wasn't expecting his style of music to mesh well with a game like Berserk Boy, and I was thankfully proven very wrong because he got some serious energy coming out of these tunes. There's not a bad track in the game that I've heard, and they all get you into the action. There's no chill jams going on here, which is fine. Because the game, this is not the style of game you want to chill in. You want to get active, rushy, rushy, punchy, punchy, slashy, slashy, whatever you want to call it. That's what you want. And I feel like his music is a driving force as you traverse the levels and bring down the lightning, electric-fused pain to your foes. I didn't want to go through this review without bringing that up because his music is freaking bonkers in this game. Ultimately, this game delivered in the way that I was hoping it would and then some. It is a game that if you were looking at it as a consideration, you need to bump that up to a give me. If you like action platformers, I don't like using the Metroidvania thing. In fact, I won't use that here. But if you do like action platformers with some exploration that does not necessarily lead to Metroidvania qualifications, I do feel as though this game belongs on your platform of choice because it is worth it.
Well, for the whole Metroidvania thing, is this one whole cohesive world, or is it broken up into stages?
People like to use Metroidvania simply because you're going to places, the levels aren't linear. Like, I should be going right, but I can go up and find a thing. People like
using Metroidvania, you've got to be a whole cohesive world that you're traversing back and forth through. If you're just going, stage-based levels, that's not Metroidvania.
Oh, trust me, there's a way that can be too, but that's a whole other episode. We could have the Metroidvania breakdown with Joe and Purnell, but today we don't want to take up anyone's time. Just know this is not a Metroidvania game. It is a cool action platformer that has some light exploration. You should buy it. It's really good.
I was also going to say it's $20. What's your verdict on it? But you beat me to it.
It's a buy it because you should buy it because it's really good.
All right. Sounds good. Next up, Euphoria, the Saga 2, developed by Sunsoft, published by Red Art Games, released March 1st, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Explore the unique and wacky world of Sunsoft's Euphoria in this exploration-based side-scrolling game. The level's terrain changes each time you play, with new secrets to explore. Be charmed, comforted, and tickled by the fluffy felt-like remake, strange but cute world of Euphoria. Chris, what is Euphoria the Saga 2?
Well, it's the sequel that nobody knew we've been needing all this time. Okay, so this is one of those kind of remakes that needs a history lesson. I'm sorry, y'all have to, you know, put down your phones and pay attention in class.
Yeah, I think this is the kind of game that deserves a history lesson, honestly.
Yeah, so in the later days of Sunsoft's, like, you know, kind of 8-bit reign, I suppose, you know, Sunsoft, you'll recognize as the creators of such games as Batman on the NES, Fester's Quest, Blaster Master, Journey to Silius, and lots of Looney Tunes games for whatever reason. They also served as a publisher. They actually even published Square Enix games back when they were Squaresoft games, like the Final Fantasy trilogy on the Game Boy. Its second run was published by Sunsoft. So, you know, they've always been around. But really, you know, they really thrived in the 8-bit era. But here's the thing. They were still developing NES games when the SNES was already out. And for that reason, we missed a lot of their best work. One outstanding example that I have covered before, because I got to cover the re-release of it, was Mr. Gimmick. Mr. Gimmick was a late-era NES Sunsoft game of extremely high quality. Well, a contemporary of Mr. Gimmick is Hebereki, which, by the way, that's my pronunciation of it. It's, you know, it is a Japanese word. It means drunkenness, actually. It's kind of a colloquialism for drunk. But anyways, Hebereki was a series of games. Basically, around the time that Sunsoft was trying to develop a mascot, I mentioned this in the Mr. Gimmick review. So a lot of the games that Sunsoft developed in-house at this time were like kind of games like this, where they had these cute characters and, you know, interesting, you know, obscure situations and stuff. And Hebereki was basically the one that won. Did it win distribution in the United States? Not for a very long time. But this game was, oddly enough, released in Europe. And the original game, which was an action-adventure game on the NES, like I said, in 91-92, let's just call it that. Anyways, 91-92, you know, SNES was already out and already doing great. In Europe, they actually did translate this game into English, changed up a couple of things, which is odd, and then released it as Euphoria the Saga, which makes about as much sense as a title as Hebereki. Well, then they proceeded to continue releasing sequels, and, you know, Hebereki, or the character of Hebi, which is the main character, who is a little albino penguin, which... I might as well say right now, one of the things that they changed when they turned Hebereki into Euphoria the Saga for European release is they changed the little penguin into a little snowman, and they changed his name to Bop Louie. Bop Louie. But his name is Hebi. That's his actual name, and he is a cute little penguin. And so we must forget about this snowman for now. But yeah, so... You know, like I said, after Hebereki / Euphoria the Saga, Europeans only saw one more game, which was Hebereki's Papoon, which was released in Europe as well on the SNES. And then after that, they just kept coming out with games. They came out with like a handful of other games, most of which, almost all of which, are either puzzle games and... You know, were released on everything from like the PlayStation to the Saturn to even the Wonder Swan, Neo Geo. And one was a racing game, which is actually kind of cool. I really want to play that. I actually only learned about it recently, so I haven't had a chance to try it out yet. But yeah, they had a racing game too, like, a, you know, around the time that Mario Kart was big. So you can well imagine. So yeah, in the U.S., we never got to hear about this guy until the Wii's virtual console with no with no ceremony at all, just released the European Euphoria the Saga as a virtual console title on the Wii. And that was the first time we got to actually try it in the US officially. I say officially because obviously emulation has been a thing since the actual 90s. And this game, while not as well known as even Mr. Gimmick, which wasn't even a game that sold as well, but you know, Mr. Gimmick is a little bit more, has a little bit more notoriety, probably for its, you know, expansive like physics and sound engines. Anyways, but Hebereki has a cult following among emulation enthusiasts such as myself. So, the official release of Euphoria the Saga was on the Wii and then the Wii U, and then nothing else. We haven't seen a Switch release of it. There's never been like a physical release of it. There's no official repros or anything like that. I mean, but Sunsoft has decided that they're coming back. And what they did is they only went and developed a whole ass sequel to the original Hebereki, which is officially Hebereki 2, Euphoria the Saga 2. This is the first game in the series, again, that started in 1991, that is an action-adventure game. I'm just going to go ahead and say Metroidvania. I'm not ashamed.
Wow.
So that's the history leading up to the game, including letting you know about Bop Louie, which I'm glad I got to do. So thank you for indulging me there. So let's talk about the game we're talking about today, Euphoria the Saga 2. Well, this game is a 3D, it is a sequel, but since the original doesn't really follow a story, this doesn't super follow a story either. You know, it's Mario-esque in the sense that it's the same characters having roughly the same adventure as last time. But the thing is that the construction of the story is perfect for this kind of gameplay, because it's heavy, along with his three other friends, and what you have to do, and this is what you had to do in the original game, is you have to traverse different stages and different locations in order to actually do battle with your friends who have been possessed by this evil black goo that seems to be polluting the place. And once you free them of that, then they join your party and you freely get to swap between characters, and each character has different abilities that are going to open up new areas of the map. Nice and simple, you know, worked for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, The Radical Rescue on the Game Boy. It works here. You didn't have to fight the other turtles, but you did have to fight a boss before you unlocked the turtles. I hope that the comparison made sense to every gamer who has definitely played both. Although you have no excuse not to, because they're both on the Switch. So there you go. But anyways, so the cast of characters is the usual kind of characters that would accompany a albino penguin wearing a woolly blue hat, such as Mr. Heavy. We've got O-chan, who was named Freon Leon in Euphoria. She seems like she's a cute cat, but don't be fooled. She's actually a girl in a cat suit. For some reason, she is hanging out with all of these animals and just fitting right in. There's nobody even mentions that she's a human. And sometimes if she takes damage or does a certain react, like her little cat hood kind of flies up and you can actually see like her hair and stuff. But yeah, apart from that, she's just a girl. She likes to sing karaoke. She can swim. So that unlocks areas that you have to swim to, because believe it or not, your little penguin guy can't swim. Then you get Tsukizemon, which is he was named Shades in Euphoria because he wears sunglasses. He is a ghost that wears sunglasses, yeah, and a little hat with wings on it, and he can float like Princess Peach style. So you know, he kind of drifts, and that gives you long jumps, and that gets you into other areas. And then we have a green anglerfish guy who has like legs and arms, as well as being an anglerfish. And his name is Jennifer. he's also called Gil in Euphoria because, you know, that's boring. I much prefer Jennifer.
Do I know it's not boring? What's that? Never boring when I hear Purnell go, fucking yeah, which means we got a sub, our good friend Vertically Impaired, Tony, coming in with the 72-month resub.
That that
blows
amazing.
My mind. I think cool. That may have been every month. That would make sense. Yeah, that's a lot.
72 months. That's 3 decades almost.
That's like 2 years or something.
Thank you for the breather and for subbing.
You doing?
Oh, thank you.
Anyway.
So Jennifer the Fish. I just love Jennifer the Fish. Jennifer the Fish obviously can dive into the water and go underwater for even more adventures. Every character in the game has this amazing kind of a little bit of like a Yoshi's Crafted World or something, like kind of a realistic textured look to them. They're not like straight up like polygons or realistic or anything. They look like they're made of like materials. Like you could totally see Mr. Hebby being like made of like 2 scoops of styrofoam and then like an actual knit wool cap with little strings coming off of it on the top. Like this game is adorably textured. You know, clearly backgrounds are just kind of like either they look like they're painted on or cut out of cardboard paper. Whereas platforms like stand out like a lot, so they're very easy to see. Each character has a projectile weapon that they can, you know, this game is very simple. It's got like jump and it's got throw, you know, just like the original. And then, of course, the shoulder buttons to switch between them. And then, you know, it's like some menu and map buttons. But yeah, you jump and you throw. And the way you throw is that you can grab basically a ball of wool from your hat and flick it at the goo and at the enemies. It stuns regular enemies. It kills goo because wool is the natural enemy of goo, as they say. And then you have a butt stomp. If you jump in the air and push the shoulder button, then you come down with a butt stomp. And so, you know, very familiar kinds of controls for folks who generally like platformers. There's no complex systems to learn here. And in fact, what this game adds to the whole formula is that since you can collect coins and cans throughout the levels, you're basically the cans, which are called, I don't know, Utsu cans or something like that. When you collect them, there will be vending machines that pop up, and the more cans you collect, the more items get unlocked, and then you use the coins to purchase the items. Very simple. One thing that you can do is you can actually purchase new moves for your characters and even improve things. One of my favorites is a technique manual that you can purchase called Butt Book. And it shows it, and the cover of it is all 4 characters' butts. And it says, teaches the secrets of the perfect butt bounce. So I appreciate that you can get that out of a vending machine. It's very Japanese. but yeah, you can purchase healing items, you can purchase extra hearts, anything that you want. Now, of course, these coins are going to be pretty scarce in the levels themselves, so what you can do, instead of just running through the same level and grabbing up all the coins like really boringly, what the game has provided for you is the fact that every time you enter the level, it shuffles it around a little bit. So it's actually, you know, while it's no harder or easier than the last time you came through, there will be different things in the levels. And as you unlock more stuff from the vending machines, more side levels and secret levels and like all kinds of other things will become unlocked, including extra challenges, challenge rooms, the ability to re-challenge a boss, all of which give you the rewards of more cans and more coins. So you're progressing through this game, swapping between your characters and using their unique movement powers, yeah, to get through. But actually what you're also doing is you're constantly collecting and constantly saving up for like the next cool thing that you want to buy to make your adventure easier, more fun, and more interesting. All of this is set to a basically the soundtrack is largely original, but it does reuse a lot of Naoki Kodaka's which, by the way, that's a name you gotta know if you're a fan of Sunsoft. He's the composer for Blaster Master, Journey to Silius, Fester's Quest, etc. But yeah, he's known as one of the greats in Japanese 8-bit composing, and his soundtrack for Hebereki is amazing. And they remastered it for and kind of remade it for this game. And so you'll hear a lot of references musically to the original game, and I really, really like that touch. Lots of dialogue between the characters. I was mentioning that the game has a crafted look. Literally, all of your character portraits and the character dialogue is done in perlers. So
what?
Yeah, perler beads is really all up in this game. So I found that to be an extremely nice touch, and I've never seen that in a video game before. So I'm a big fan of that, and I'm a big fan of this
unique thing to do.
It is, yeah. I would say that it is the classic definition of the word unique.
Yay!
Yay!
There you go, Thimber. That's your shot. Euphoria, the Saga 2 clocks in at $25. What are your thoughts on this thing?
Oh god, I've been waiting for this game for apparently 30 years without realizing it. Yeah, absolutely, it's worth it. There is a physical release, however, and it did have a collector's edition. I think they're both sold out, but there could still be the physical regular edition. They're being sold for real cheap by a small batch seller I have not purchased from before. But I did pre-order my my special edition of this, which comes with like a CD and an art book, like a simple collector's edition, but special nonetheless. So I hope that won't take 5 years to get to me. But anybody who wants to go the digital route, $25 is well worth it. Obviously, I would say go the physical route if you can. It's not much more expensive, but it may not be available at this point. So apologies if I've led you astray. Euphoria the Saga is one of those games that I wish it would have come out in the US, even though it was super late in the NES's life cycle, because I really feel like it could have made Sunsoft more of a presence in the 90s here than they were, because we had Roadrunners, Death Valley Rally, and whatever, you know, like I think actually Death Valley Rally is one of Sunsoft's. We had like things like that, I got it right. Roadrunners, Death Valley Rally is Sunsoft. that was off the top of my head. I did not make that in a note or anything. Rather than being known for like Looney Tunes games like Duck Dodgers and whatnot, we could have like really seen Sunsoft as like the brilliant creators that they are, because they are. We only know of like really Blaster Master, I would say, and then like an excellent Batman game on the NES, one of the very rare prior to the Arkham games. But yeah, I really wish this would have come out back then. I really wish that the original will come out on the Switch now, gimmick style, like make that, they did that with Trip World. They did it with Gimmick. Let's do it with Euphoria. And yeah, everybody next. go pick up the sequel. It's amazing.
Cool. Sounds good. Big shout out to Thimber hanging out in chat. It's their birthday.
Happy birthday, Thimber.
Happy birthday. Thimber.
What cheap game do you want for your birthday? Think about it.
Now we'll just sit. We're just going to sit here and wait the whole time until the Twitch delay goes out. And then
forgot about
the answer. We sit here.
All right.
Oh, no, it's happening now. It's happening now. We're too deep in to have this end now. Now we just have to sit here and wait for Thimber to be like, I want this game for my birthday. And we'll be like, I hope you get it. And instead, we'll just be sitting here waiting because Thimber's not saying anything yet.
Happy birthday to Thimber. Happy birthday
to Thimber.
Happy birthday. Dear Thimber.
Happy birthday to Thimber.
Thimber. Hey, we did it. Thimber, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I did that, man. I don't know why I'm like this. We love you.
Next game to talk about is Quilts and Cats of Calico, developed by Monster Couch, published by Monster Couch and Flat Out Games. Released March 5th on Steam for $19.99. Quilts and Cats of Calico is a wholesome, award-winning, complex puzzle game for 1 to 4 players. Meet adorable cats and sew the coziest quilts. Compete with other players in multiplayer mode, play solo, or delve into the story of a quilter sewing their way through the city of cats. Brooke, what is going on in Quilts and Cats of Calica?
Well, first of all, if I may, Joe, I just want to say, may the cats be with you. Like my Aunt Agatha, you will always say. I mean, I believe in the cats. I'm religious. I'm not crazy about it like her. You know, she's always walking around holding a big cat Bible. She's always
got
decked
one
out
right
her
now
cat
with
tools.
Me.
I know.
Say hi, Jolly. Say hi, Jolly. Oh, no. Whatever.
Yeah, my aunt. She's always decked out in her cat jewels, praying and crap. Her entire personality is worshiping the cats. But you know, that's not super weird since she lives in the free city of Tom Kitty that's located, as you know, in the kingdom of Scratchington, where you and I are talking right now. But yeah, I mean, I give Aunt Agatha a lot of crap, but truth is, everybody here in Tom Kitty City worships the cats. I mean, the whole town is built around our number one export, quilts, blessed by the cats themselves, to keep the cats in our favor. So maybe I'm the weird one here. Hi, I'm Brooke. You're probably wondering how I got here. Sorry. You're probably wondering how I got here. Talking about worshiping cats and whatnot, because if you listen to this review tonight, you may be checking this out because you've played the board game. And that doesn't sound anything like this. Calico is just a cozy board game where you sew a quilt that a cat might like, and you try to get the most points out of it, of you and your friends. See who makes the best quilt at the end of the game. And to that I say, wow, just a quilting board game. I guess that's what a non-believer would say. Someone who's played the board game, but not the story campaign of the digital Steam version. But you know what? I can see why you'd say that because it just came out today. You probably haven't played it yet, but I have. Now let's chill for a second. I'm going to call this Purnell Corner. Get a little serious tonight because we have none other than Purnell with us on the show tonight, also here to review games. But Purnell isn't just a game reviewer. He's also my friend. And, like I used to be until recent years, a fellow board game enthusiast and collector. It is no secret that I have a sick collection of board games. I used to be quite into them. Why used to be? Well, past few years have been a little hard on me socially. I have always had issues socializing, but I moved away from all my friends at Texas in 2018. Pandemic happened, of course, in 2020. And then the last couple of years, I've learned I have ASD, which makes a lot of sense in retrospect, but has also made me very self-conscious about my mental and my social struggles, especially real time, that have led me to step back on my board game hobby. Because I have honestly developed some really serious board game learning anxiety, especially live in group while people are waiting for me, watching me. So many ways to mess up. Purnell knows this because I've confided in him about how I used to love board gaming. I was that guy in my friend group long ago. I even got my partner into Uwe Rosenberg games in 2012. But recent years, you know, they've been tough for me. I'm finding my footing now again. I have been trying to make myself take that dive back into board games. And when Joe dropped Quilts and Cats of Calico in our team chat here, asked if anybody wanted to review it, I said yes, because as y'all know, you know, I take pretty much any game with the, you know, coziness, any cat game, no questions asked. I've got a lot of cat games under my belt at this point. Thank you, Joe, by the way.
It's funny how many people on this show are like, I want the cat game.
We love cats. Yeah.
Because Chris really wants the cat games. You want the cat games. Bree wants the cat game. I want the cat game. We're and all cat game enthusiasts.
There's almost enough to go around for all of us too.
So yeah, totally is.
Like it's amazing.
I got so many cat games. Like you can have so many cat games because I am so full.
Not full yet. I could use a little more. There's always room for a little more. Anyway, so I noticed this was a digital version of a board game, and it looked kind of cool. I felt the board game itch coming on, because truth is, if I liked it and I bought this game IRL, it would be one of two board games I own about building a cozy quilt. So I took it. I told my partner about it because we share a love of board games, and he was like, oh, Calico, Quilts and Cats of Calico, like the board game Calico? Our new neighbors, his friends who we mentioned a couple weeks ago, we moved out here to San Jose a couple weeks ago to be closer to, actually own that game. And I think it's one of their favorites. So I took a deep breath and I asked Carrie if he would bring them over last weekend so I could try it and compare it to the digital version. That's right. Purnell, I asked my partner to set me up and play a new board game in a group. My idea, something Purnell knows I have been avoiding for like 4 years now. My partner said, I did it. His head exploded. It was really gross. His friends who have been wanting to play board games with me, but have been also sensitive to my anxieties, were also amazed. And lo and behold, Saturday rolled around. They brought it over. We started playing. Now, I had been playing the digital version right before they came by, but I still asked them to teach us the game fresh from the beginning so we'd all be on the same level here. We began to go over the rules of the game. Each player has a personal board that looks like a quilt of cute patches with different colors, patterns, and different combinations of the two. The edges of the quilt are complete, but the middle spaces have to be slowly filled in as the game goes on. We get patches. We can choose to put on our quilt in whatever style or order we want. Whatever we think looks pretty, we can do. But in order to get points and win the game, we want to get an assortment of different little sets of matching quilt pieces, either matching with color or pattern based on three spaces on your board, randomized each time, that show you had to max out your quilt to get the most points at the end of the game. There's a little marketplace of patch tiles in the center of the board, and we each start with a random two patches of our own. We take turns placing one patch, taking a new patch from the market. We keep this going until everyone's quilts are totally complete, and that's the game. So there we are, with our two patches each, staring at a little marketplace of patches, and ready to start the game. I finally speak for the first time in the group that day. I say, wow, such bounty lays before us tonight. Look at these beautiful patches, man. I've never seen anything like this. You know, back before my father disappeared, he taught me how to sew. Back then, all we had to our name was eight spools of thread and assortments of needles and buttons. And they're all looking at me, and I'm like, what? Oh, sorry, man, just RPing it a little. Ignore me. Please continue the rules. Little did they know, I was reading screenshots on my phone of the campaign I was playing in the game. So we kept learning the game. In addition to the basics of how to take our turn and fill in our quilt, we can gain bonus points throughout the game by adding a special buttons to our quilt. When we combo out with three same colored patches or more, we can even get a rainbow button. So I went, oh, I see. This is a rich people game. Yeah, I get it. See, after my father, who taught me how to sew, left for the war, you know, he never came back. We assumed the worst. That's when I had to go to Aunt Agatha's house to crash with her. Joe, this is really from the campaign. This shit's intense. But she's super rich. So it's fine. She doesn't even notice I'm there. Yeah, people in Tom Kitty City sure have a lot of fancy buttons. Everybody's like, what the fuck is going on with her? Why does she keep doing this? They're like looking at Carrie. We keep learning the board game, which is the same mechanics of the digital game, by the way. We can get bonus points by attracting cats. All cats have two different quilt patch patterns they prefer. You get them a nice patch of one of their favorite patterns connected. They will walk over to your quilt and just sit down, lay down. They're worth extra points at the end of the game. We learned this rule and they're like, oh, how cute that the cats come over and sit on the quilt if you do the thing. I'm like, yeah, yeah, it's cute now, real cute. We'll see how cute you think it is when there are human lives on the line. Because we're at war, baby. That's all the fright. This whole thing where the cats come to the quilt or not, maybe you get some bonus points if they do, there'll be a deal either way. That's a lie. That's what they want you to think, man. And everybody at the table is like, who wants us to think that, dude? And I'm like, just sit back. I let out a deep sigh. I say, the government. They're coming in with this new invention, the iron loom. Now it can make quilts in a matter of minutes. This has never been done before. And they want you to think these quilts are fine. They think that these are as good as the cat-blessed quilts of old, but they're not. Cats don't even like these new quilts they got coming in here, taking our jobs. And if you didn't notice around here, the cats, they're the ones with the real power. Now everybody at the table is, at my house is like laughing, and I'm like, yeah, laugh it up. It's going to be real funny when you end up like my Uncle Frank, who spent the very last of his military allowance on one of those newfangled iron loom quilts because he was trying to cut corners. And one of our friends said, well, what happened to Uncle Frank? And I just slowly drew my finger across my throat. And we began the game. And we had a wonderful time. I had a really great time. I don't actually know if Frank is actually dead. I mean, he's dead to me. But obviously... I really enjoyed both the board game and the digital campaign of this game. It may be based on and around the mechanics of a real-life board game, but it's also a video game with cats. So final note, you may be asking yourself, can we pet the cat? Yes, we can. Any of the cats that show up in the board game portion itself, when they show up in the game, in the digital version, we can pet them. And we can pet them in all different kinds of ways. There are more cats than that in the campaign, though. For instance, our AI opponent is none other than a cat paw and arm that snakes across the screen to take a piece from the board whenever it is their turn. Yeah, and I had a wonderful weekend.
Sounds like you had a good time. I want to take a quick second to appreciate this one Steam review. It says, plays exactly like the board game does, fun game to wind down and relax with. The cats look a little creepy, but they're doing their best.
I can see that. I think they're cute, but the cats are animated, and they're animated in a lot of ways. Like they've got ball and socket joints and stuff. And I'll just let you know.
Like they're doing their best.
I did. That's
they're just a little guy.
They're just a little guy. Oh, yeah, this is one.
So, Quilts and Cats of Calico is $19.99 on Steam. What do you say?
I'm gonna quote a song my friend Will wrote Saturday night after they realized I was quoting the game. He goes, take me down to Tom Kitty City where the buttons are big and the quilts are pretty. And we have been saying that like nonstop. But yeah, as a board game collector and player, I think this is a fantastic game. Both physical and digital version. I think if you have the board game version, it is worth it to still own and still get that digital board game. one of the people we played with Saturday who has played the hell out of the board game, who owns it, bought the game today when it came out because I was going on about liking it, and she is loving it. Buy it, for cat's sake. I played it 10 times solo with Carrie since we played it in a group, and I'm out of my funk now, so gotta thank
the game. Very cool. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Time Rift, developed and published by Dolores Entertainment. This one is coming out March 8th on PS5 for $9.99. Time Rift is a fast-paced puzzle shooter. You're a hacker-turned-security tester, but your skills will only get you so far. To take down global megacorp Vulko, you'll have to manipulate the flow of time. Purnell, what is Time Rift?
So, what is Time Rift exactly? So, this game is a straight-up puzzler that has a kind of light narrative dropped on top of it that gets a little bit more involved as you get further into the game. The general idea is that you are Alex, an individual coming to work for Vulko as a tester, a security tester, stress tester, as you may call it. And the hacking, as you would call it in this game, is done in the form of the actual puzzle game. The game does a job by utilizing the training individual, who goes by the name of Sarah, to explain the company's security protocol using, honestly, fairly legitimate lingo. But at the same time, that lingo is still something where I'm like, what about that? Just show me the puzzle mechanic. And yeah, I'm going to just tell you from first-hand experience, if you're like, I don't want to deal with that jargon, it doesn't matter. The game is easy to pick up once you play it. And I think they do a very good job of conveying the jargon. And I do like the dialogue that Sarah has for the player. But the premise is that, or as far as the gameplay goes, is that you are controlling an icon inside of a cyberspace environment. You are constantly being chased by a firewall, like a visual impression of a firewall. That means that the game is auto-scrolling. And as you progress through the level and the direction the game is scrolling, you might come across, let's just call it a diamond with a specific segment pointing in a specific direction. Let's say a diamond that's pointing up. If you touch that icon, the firewall will now be at the bottom of the screen chasing you upwards, and the screen will be scrolling, from top to bottom. So now the direction has changed. So you'll now be moving up, and that could happen going up, down, left, or right, any of the four cardinal directions. And as you're doing this, you're ultimately trying to navigate to the exit of the level. If you can get to the end of the level, you win. Now, obviously, what I might not have conveyed at this point is that it's not just a corridor. There are pathways in this space that is constantly scrolling too. So you might have to navigate a zigzag pattern of hallways or something before getting to the arrow that's going to turn the screen up. And if you don't navigate it before the firewall catches you, well, boom, you're done. Now, that's the game at its simplest, but they keep adding complications to the game. So you might want to collect cryptocurrency units. That is considered sort of like a bonus payout if you collect those. Think of it as just, the MacGuffins that lets you get a perfect score on beating a stage. But again, they call them crypto units. So you'll be trying to collect all of those in the stage while also outrunning the firewall and also navigating the exit. And then the game will add a few more things like the ability to stop time or the ability to slow down time or the ability to rewind time. And when I say that they rewind time, in most games, you would think that means, oh, you made a mistake. Now you can rewind time to fix your mistake. Oh, no, no, no. In this game, rewinding time is a requirement. So you might come across what they introduce later in the game is the ability to fire bullets and destroy barricades. Okay, so if you just blow up a barricade and now you realize, crap, I didn't want to go that way, and you rewind time, the barricade comes back. Except sometimes they don't, because they have some barricades that are not affected by the temporal effect. So now we rewind time, the thing you blew up is still going. So you might find yourself going through a corridor, blowing up a wall, rewinding yourself back to the time where your ship was pointing horizontally, pointing upwards. Because you need to shoot upwards, but you need to get through the wall that was horizontal, which you had to shoot by having the screen going horizontally. So it starts to do weird things that break your general way of thinking, because now you need to be pointing upwards, even though you need to be scrolling to the right. So to do that, you got to do this in reverse time and go back and forth and back and forth. And if you're going for a perfect score on a level with a decent time, like some people do, you're going to have a time, a satisfying time, I'll admit, because when I succeeded at my goals, I felt great about them. And when I wasn't succeeding, I was like, one more time, one more time, one more time. And I did not expect what this game dropped on me. I started playing it just to start and give it a go. I ended up playing it for multiple hours because I wanted to do literally one more stage until I knew if I didn't go to bed, I'd get fired from my job. So I had to turn it off.
That's the good stuff. That's amazing.
It is good stuff. It is. Like, and it's dirt cheap, too. Like, I was not expecting when I got here. This game is legit. Again, the story is minimalist in the sense that it's all talked through. Every once in a while on a stage, you'll get Sarah giving you some dialogue about, you know, her training or some other stuff I won't talk about because that's kind of spoiling where the game does actively go. And then eventually you'll get to scenarios where you'll be communicating through text message as well. So it's interesting how that works. But it does enough to give you some sort of a purpose behind your, you know, your cyber delving puzzling needs or goals. I think this game is great and is a very unique puzzle game. There it is. I said
unique.
Unique puzzle game in that puzzle game in the form of its mechanics and the way it flows. If you look at screenshots do not do this game justice. I think it needs to be seen in motion to truly understand what makes it special. But once you see it in motion, you ain't going back. You're only going forward, then back for a second, then forward again, then stopping, then doing a bit of a twirl, then going through the exit with 17 out of the 18 crypto units. So you'll go back and do it all over again anyway, because you want that perfect score. This game is worth it. What's your thingy there, Joe? What'd you do?
What did I do?
No, what's that thing you do? Give me the ding.
Oh, man, I got to talk now?
Yeah, you do. I don't know.
Time Rift is $10. What do you
say? I think Time Rift is a really good. You should buy the game. Unless you don't have the money, in which case you can get it on sale. But then if you don't get it on sale, that's okay, too, because the game will still be available. Damn near it.
Okay, well, I was feeling like I was having a stroke there for a second.
Don't play Time Rift. It's like a kid. Play Time Rift. It's good.
And if you're in the market for another game from Dolores Entertainment, I believe they are also releasing their title In Celebration of Violence on
I like that one.
On PlayStation on the coming weeks as well. So I don't know. If anyone's interested in covering that, maybe we could take another look at it.
I mean, I covered it already, and I downloaded it on Switch and still I haven't played it on Switch yet, but I did play the version I reviewed.
What kind of game is that?
Top-down action roguelike hardcore.
Action roguelike. Top-down action roguelike.
Yeah.
Okay. That might be up my alley, so yeah, let me know, I guess.
Cool. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Thanks to all of y'all for being here, hanging out, keeping me company during the whole time. Thanks to Tim for coming on, doing his thing. Always good when he comes on to hang out with us.
Thank you to my internet service provider for only cutting out once and not shout outs, one of my reviews.
Shout outs to barely serviceable service.
The only kind intolerable. Available nowadays. Yeah,
pretty much.
Music this episode. What should we play?
Some T-Lopes, I guess.
How about some Earthbound music that one of us may have created?
Ooh.
Someone special.
Well, I'm in the process of it.
Wow, rough crowd. Talk about Joe.
Oh, me? My Earthbound music? Yeah. I'll play some from Bound Together again. I don't care.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Here's some Earthbound music. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Earthbound to a place where kids can dream.
Fuzzy Pickles.
Seconded. Oh, wait, we literally have a button for that.
Fuzzy Pickles. There it is.